This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings once again to everybody at TFMR. Hey, it is time for your first Thursday conversation of August, and now you're looking around going, wait a second, it's Wednesday. Well, that happens sometimes. So this week's Thursday slash Wednesday conversation is the return of an old friend whom we haven't actually, I was just speaking with Marin saying, wait a second, it's been a whole year since we've talked, and apparently it has. So here's Marin Katusa. You're probably familiar with him. He runs one of the largest hedge funds in the gold sector. He's also the head of Katusa Research and one of the most knowledgeable guys you're going to find on the precious metals and the mining sector. And so what a treat. Get a chance to talk to him again, Marin. Thank you for joining me.
It's my pleasure.
My friend, it has been some kind of year so far. You know, the last time we spoke, we both knew the gold was going to be going higher in late 2019 and 2020, if anything, just because, you know, the Fed was having to ease and reversing course on their tightening policy. And then, of course, we couldn't have anticipated COVID, but that, you know, is now pedal to the metal. Things look great. And because of the coming stagflation and lower real interest rates, I suspect that though we may ebb and flow with the typical two steps forward and one steps back, this is the sector now. We finally are getting into our sweet spot, my friend. So first of all, before we get started, tell everybody what you do and what Katusa Research is and why it can be so valuable at a time like this.
Sure. So Katusa Research is now 5 years old. I've been in the business for almost 20 years, focused outlet in the world, actually. So that solely focuses on research. So, you know, we do look. I just went through 2 weeks of self-quarantine because I went to a site visit. And to get there, we had to book our own private plane. Now, that's on my bill. And taking our engineers and geologists there, and we've all had to do the 2 week self-isolation. So it's all about bringing the best investment ideas that I can find to my subscribers at the same price, at the same time as myself. And when we sell it, my subscribers get to get out first before me. So that's kind of what we do. And we've now become one of the largest financing groups in the industry. We've done more than, you know, if you take some of the largest Canadian focused independent dealers, we've done 3 to 4 times the amount of dollar financings than some of the biggest brokerage firms. And I don't take any fees. And it's all about getting in with skin in the game. I'm usually the lead order in the financing myself. And if we get that Katusa warrant for my subscribers, you know, it's a bonus kicker.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And look, what you do is tremendous. And when people ask me, you know, which services would I recommend to help pick winners? I mean, I always list you as one of them. And I've folks around here at TF Metals Report know we've picked up a lot of subscribers this year. And a lot of people ask me, you know, I want to get involved in the sector now. You know, I'm tired of watching, or I've never been in it before. And, you know, the key is getting people on your side that know what they're talking about. And so what do they do to get Katusa Research? It's just katusaresearch.com?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, just go there and look. You don't need to subscribe. You can see the amount of data we put out weekly and the videos just to get people. Look, I started in the education field. I started out as a math and physics teacher. And it's about educating people. And right now, the only thing I would caution everyone is, don't feel like you have to chase stocks. I've got the whole alligator concept. And if anything, go to my website and you can go into the search Google portion and go the alligator investment theory and start with that, because we're not going to go straight up like a rocket ship. The trend is our friend. There's absolutely no doubt. But there's going to be pullbacks. And more importantly, something that nobody in the sector is really talking about is, yes, generalist money, passive money is coming into the sector, but it's coming through direct exposure through the metal. A lot of people are shocked to hear that year to date, the actual exposure to the flow of funds to the actual mining companies is down just under $2 billion. So
wow.
That's why you're not seeing the, you know, the some of these gold stocks not keep up with the gold price, because the generalists got burnt the last time around. And they're still hesitant. So they'd rather play the liquidity of direct exposure to gold and they're hesitant on the mining companies, and yet mining companies are much cheaper relative to the price of gold where it's at. So you've got to do your homework. You've got to know what you're doing. And please follow people who have skin in the game, not a bunch of jokers who are getting paid to talk about stuff.
Right, right. No, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I think of 2016, you know, a lot of folks weren't believers until the summer of 2016 after the HUI had already doubled or tripled. And then, and so they're a little skittish to get involved again. And I also think about your friend Rick Rule. I call it the Rule, because he gave me this a bit of information about a year ago. You know, of look, we peaked at maybe 8% total global asset allocation in 1980, and we're still like at 1 now. You know, what happens if we go back to 2, 3, 4? And I think that's what you're driving at.
Exactly.
All right, my friend, I got a couple of things I want to talk about with you, but first. I want to go back because there were all sorts of people on my site here that were asking me about what's Marin talking about with these swap lines and how that might influence things going forward. And that was all part of why I wanted to chase you down, because I wasn't going to try to explain that for you. Hell, I don't even know I want you to do it. So lay that on me. What is your thought there, and how does that maybe continue to impact things as we go through the rest of this year and beyond?
What you're going to see, now that gold starting to get, you know, front page newspaper attention, and so many of the developing world is going to be in a shortage of U.S. dollar. Look, every guru right now is saying the dollar's done and it's broken. And I'm telling everyone, hold up a sec. The dollar, eventually, look, I'm very bullish on gold, but in the near term, I'm actually really strong over the next couple of years on the U.S. dollar, because what other currency do you want to hold? Do you want to hold the yen, the ruble, the yuan, the peso, the Canadian dollar? And, you know, I published this stuff for free to show over the last 10 years, the U.S. dollar has outperformed all of these currencies, whether it's the euro or the ruble, or, you know, the Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar, never mind some of the emerging markets like Turkey and South Africa and many other Latin American nations. So what the swap line concept essentially is it was really first implemented in the global financial crisis of late 2008. Even Ben Bernanke had a tough time explaining it in front of Congress when he was brought forth to explain what is going on here. And essentially, there's 14 nations that have been granted swap lines. The 15th that has been accepted was Indonesia, but they haven't been actually granted officially the transfer of dollars. And what it is it's a 7-day loan and an 84-day loan where the U.S. Fed provides U.S. dollars for the central bank, whether it's the European Union, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, Sweden, there's 14 nations that have officially got those. And those are nations that are true allies with the Americans and have accepted the terms and conditions. In each country, whether it's Korea or Japan, they have different interest rates, and then they pay it back and they roll it over. So, you know, by April, the deficit got to about $500 trillion. It's been paid back about half. But there's a bigger theory here. So what I'm trying to explain to people is, at the same time, with what China's trying to do with their one road, one belt, and one currency, is trying to gain geopolitical leverage. And if you look at, you know, some of the key areas of the Chinese concept, and you look at what the American geopolitical foreign policies change, you want to be very careful where your gold and resource investments are, because there's many deposits that I know of that royalty companies have a gold stream and pay zero tax in that local currency. Eventually, as those countries have a shortage of U.S. dollar and face extreme inflation and devaluation of their own currency, the debt is in U.S. dollar. Now, many people have said, oh, but, you know, they can sell assets and they have all these U.S., you know, things that they can sell. But, you know, to who? When it gets into the insolvency phase of this next period, the debt stays the same. The assets shrink in value depending on who will bid what. So what I'm trying to explain is really rethink your political risk. And so many people have knocked it when I say, okay, look, I've taken very little, like I've been around this game for a long time. I'm one of the largest financiers in the game. I've been to over 115 countries. I put body armor on to go look in and assess oil wells and deposits in pretty dangerous places. I've done the whole Indiana Jones thing, and it's really cool to write a story about doing it. But at the end of the day, when you go through a real track record, I have outperformed every index and every other fund manager by not taking crazy political risk.
Yep.
And my whole concept is you don't need to take these crazy risks. And look what's going on in Zimbabwe. In all, many nations are starting to call gold a strategic asset because it is real money. Mm-hmm. And it's the best way to get money, especially if the mine is already built and operating. And I've said that these countries, look what Argentina's come out and said, you know, they want to rethink the whole environmental concept because they don't believe these American, Canadian, and Australian companies care about their water. Well, first of all, I've been to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of projects. And the fact is the North American companies and the Australian companies are world leaders in the environmental aspect of mining. Now, does it mean that there's no footprint? Of course there's a footprint. But compared to the artisanal mining that happens by the local indigenous people, right, whether it's in Brazil or Argentina or China, Russia, the stands, that is true carnage. But they're going to use the ESG against the foreigners to pay up, meaning they want higher royalties, they want higher taxes, they're going to want bigger insider ownership. And my whole point of the concept of swap lines is if you have a swap line, you got to follow the rules and conditions of the Americans or else you're not going to get the swap line. And the swap line is much bigger than any one mine. So it's a guide to start where do you want your political risk. And on top of that, all this came about where, you know, some of the big positions I had are politically stable jurisdictions, all positive swap line nations. And they're getting the same discount rate as something in the DRC or in Argentina or, you know, some politically, you know, in Kazakhstan, all these places that have huge risks. And I'm sitting here going, how the hell is the street accepting these same discount rates for this type of political risk versus something in, say, the US or Canada or Australia? And it's the first time in 17 years that I've seen the street be agnostic to the political risk for whatever reason. People say, well, you know, I've made money in, you know, these crazy places and, you know, I've lost money in Canada because of the political risks. I'm not denying that, but the political system's also changed over the last 20 years. So be very careful. We are in a G2 world and the political alliances have changed. So, you know, buyer beware.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point. And I don't know, maybe that's people have gotten too accustomed to just easy money, you know, of following and buy Apple and watch it go up the next day or Tesla, that they don't want to do their homework anymore and look at stuff like this. Maybe it's something like that. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that's a logical concern that you've put forth, Aaron. Break it down just one more time for me, though. The safer jurisdictions under this guideline, if you will, would be what? Which countries?
Well, I would definitely stick with certain areas in Canada. Like, and I'm not saying that everywhere in Canada is perfect. There are certain areas of Canada that I won't put any money in. There are certain areas in the U.S. I wouldn't put, but U.S. I will look at. And for people to think that U.S. don't have world-class assets, they should really shake their head. Same thing Australia. Australia is world-class. There are certain areas in Europe that are really compelling for gold. You know, so the other nations that do have swap lines that I'd have no interest for any resource development is some of the Asian ones like Korea and Japan. I'm just not going to go there. But really, you know, the Brazil is an interesting one because it has swap lines and there's incredible resource wealth in Brazil. So that's another one that, you know, people should look at. But again, not all areas are the same. So, you know, buyer beware.
Okay. Well, thank you for explaining that. That really helps. Let me move on to the second thing I wanted to ask you about. And I had, I guess now, maybe 3 or 4 months ago, I spoke for the first time with a friend of yours, Amir Adnani, who is the head of Gold Mining Inc. And he's a brilliant guy, fascinating to talk to. Maybe I'll put a link to that podcast on this page so people can go back and listen to it. And when I got off the phone with him, I thought, damn, that's a company I should buy some shares in. I've recently bought some more. I know you're a big shareholder in that. And so I thought, well, while I've got you on the line, I want to find out more about that and some of the things they've been doing because it's really fascinating. I mean, it's not that they're reinventing the wheel, but they might be, what's the word, deconstructing it in a sense, like you do a dessert sometimes in a fancy restaurant. I mean, they're doing things maybe out of order or they're doing something unique. What fill me in on what's going on there, because I just find it very, very interesting.
Well, first of all, Amir is an incredible individual when it comes to dedication to work. You know, when I started out, my first focus was just focus on the absolute best people. And just professionally and personally, he's a top-notch guy. And when I say that, I mean the dedication to the work on weekends and Sundays and late nights. And he's got an incredible wife that understands and accepts who he is. And that's the first thing when you really invest in the position that I am in, to really understand his background what really makes him tick. So when you look at gold mining and why we're such large shareholders and why I'm such a believer in it, is he did everything the way you're supposed to do it. So when nobody wanted gold, he went up and built up a resource of over 25 million ounces in all the different categories of gold. And you think about what he paid for it versus what those assets were worth in just 2012. You're talking less than 10 cents on the dollar. Number two, we talk about dilution. So many guys try to go out and do that whole concept, like, you know, the most famous person that did that concept of consolidating undervalued assets or nobody wanted was another good friend of mine, Ross Beaty. And Ross Beaty really likes Amir. And, you know, the key there is make sure you increase the shareholder exposure in every M&A transaction. So, you know, and when I try to explain to people, I just go, you know, share to gold ratio. Now, every time you do a transaction, does my exposure to the gold go down or up? And Amir is one of the few guys over the last decade that every transaction, and remember, the last time he raised money was 4 years ago. If you owned it from 4 years ago to today, you have more exposure to gold than you did back then. That's a very rare thing. So it's the opposite of dilution. It's increasing value. So then where do you get to now? Now, you know, we're in a situation where gold's 2000. The passive funds are looking for liquidity. And it's the royalty companies and streaming companies trade at incredible premiums to their net asset value. So what does that mean? Think of it simply as if your house is worth $1 million, the market's valuing it as $3 or $4 million. Of course, you're going to hit the bid there. But more importantly is your cost of capital relative to your true value is a lot less than, say, the developers or guys who are exploring or trying to put a project into production, because the market values the explorers and developers at a big discount to NAV. Okay. So their house is worth maybe $200,000 for the same house that's worth, you know, technically $1 million, but the streamers get valued at $3.5 to $4 million. What I'm trying to explain here is what NAV is, net asset value. So, you know, the guy who really was the original thinker of this is a good friend of mine named Sean Rosen. He is so smart and successful. And when he built a mine called Malartic for Osisko, he had a hostile build by Goldcorp. And to ward that off, he put a 5% royalty on Malartic, and that became Osisko Royalties ultimately. And I thought that was so brilliant because at the time, you know, every royalty company in the world wanted that asset. And he said, why would I dilute my shareholders because of their cost if I can just spin it out and have the shareholders? So I wrote a whole piece about this about a year and a half ago. And I've been pushing all of the management teams that I'm a big shareholder in, going, look, most mining guys aren't really financial savvy compared to, say, like a Nolan Watson, who's a good buddy of mine who runs Sandstorm. These are savvy, savvy, smart guys. But if you take that same concept and rather than, you know, taking the cash for a future payment in the royalty, if you spin out that royalty company and let your shareholders have the exposure, that's optimizing the shareholder value, and you'll get that premium in the market later by bringing cash flow and other aspects. And that's Amir's the first guy since Sean Rosen to do that concept of building up an incredible asset base and letting the shareholders of their company, you know, get that upside on the royalty company. And that's what Amir announced with Gold Royalty Company, which, you know, look, I'm speculating here, but I think it'll be listed on a big exchange, something like the New York Stock Exchange, within 12 months. And then you're going to see, look at that resource base. There's maybe, you know, 30 to 40, maybe 50 private and public royalty companies I'm aware of right now And automatically it puts Amir within the top tier of these, you know, trying to be the big four royalty companies. So it's incredible times. Mm-hmm. Amir is always going to where the puck is going to be, and he's optimizing shareholder value. And it's what I've talked about for many years. Last time I was on your show, I said the same thing. Stick to the smart people who have skin in the game.
Yep.
Who's the largest individual shareholder of Gold Mining Inc.? It's Amir. He's put his whole life into this. He's the largest individual shareholder, and he's written a check in every financing. That's what you want to back. Smart, aggressive people who are invested in the deal. And, you know, I'm simplifying it here, but I think there's great times. And more importantly, he's going to be able to attract incredible people because there's incredible value there. So I think it's just the beginning of that story of a really successful run for shareholders in that story.
And again, for people like me that own it, if you own it now and that royalty company gets kind of spun out, you invariably get shares of that.
So you get exposure to it. And that's the beauty of this, like right off the bat, that portfolio, if you compare it to any of its peers in you know, there's many I can talk about, but it's easily worth $100 million US easily. Okay. And that, you see, hasn't been reflected. And
right.
Once those shares, you know, whether it's Gold Mining owns it or however it works out, that's just a net benefit to the shareholders of Gold Mining Inc. So it's going to be very exciting.
Got it. Yeah. And as I look at it, I'm looking at it right now. Does this sound right? Gold Mining Inc. has a market cap about $260 million. Does that sound about right?
Correct.
Yeah. And again, this is so important. I just had a question last week. On my weekly discussion with Eric Sprott, that somebody wrote in and said, I bought this stock at, you know, $1 a share, and it doesn't seem to want to go up. And then I figured out that, you know, there's 1 billion shares outstanding. Like, well, that's why. I mean, market caps are pretty important. You know, how many shares outstanding is pretty important, wouldn't you say?
And more importantly, it's how is it being valued, and where are those assets? So if you look at his asset base, he's in the U.S., he's in Canada. He's got a big project in Colombia. And although Colombia is not a swap line country, it's a major investment area for some of the bigger boys like Newmont. He's in much lower risk jurisdictions than many of the other royalty companies, because the royalty companies are chasing assets. And you could not build that asset base at $1,900 gold, because it would cost you hundreds of millions of dollars to build that. To replace that portfolio in today's market, it would be much greater than the market cap today. It yeah. only worked because he was doing it when gold was $1,100, $1,200, and $1,300, when nobody wanted the assets. He was a true contrarian, like the concept of what Ross Beaty did and Sean Rose. And you buy the assets when nobody wants it. And now he's optimizing shareholder value with the whole royalty company. And it's just the perfect playbook. This will be a case study. And people say, oh my God, this is such a great success. He's been working on this for a decade. I've been a shareholder of this company for a decade. It takes a long time to be successful, just like with Lumina and, you know, with Ross Beaty. It took over a decade, but his time will come, and shareholders will get paid handsomely for being patient.
I'm going to have to get Amir in here again now that you've piqued my interest once more. And I'm going to have to get myself some more shares, because I think it's a fabulous idea what he's doing. And obviously I think gold's going higher. So I think it's going to work pretty well. Marin, I thank you so much for sharing this information, not only this stuff on Gold Mining Inc., but explaining the swap line stuff, because again, you don't want to just go around guessing. You don't want to just throw darts at a board. Yeah. That, you know, if it's a bull market, that'll probably work out at least okay. But at a time like this, you need expert help. I mean, you need folks that have skin in the game, as Marin said, that know what the hell they're doing. And Marin certainly does. So again, KatusaResearch.com, where you want to check that out. And Marin, let's make sure it's not a year before we talk again, okay?
Sounds good. Stay well.
You too, my friend. Stay well and safe and healthy. Again, thanks for your time, Marin. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll have another Thursday conversation next week.